This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today by phone, very long distance, with Pastor John Setterland, who is serving as a parish volunteer in a Lutheran church on the West Bank in Palestine. So we're going to be making sure we have a good connection here. John, can you hear me all right?
I can hear you just fine.
Wonderful. And you sound awake in spite of the fact that it's 1 a.m. there in Palestine.
That's true.
Well, thank you very much for staying awake so long in order to be live on this Keeping the Faith program, January 6th in the year 2013. We chose this date, January 6th, because it's the Orthodox Christian Christmas Eve. Tell our listeners, why are there so many Christmases celebration and Christmas Eves? And you're sitting right there next to Bethlehem in Judea.
Right. In the city of Bethlehem and in Jerusalem, the Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church have there are holidays on different, according to different calendars. I think there was a calendar revision back in the time of Gregory the Great or something that the church in the East decided they would not adopt, whereas the church in the West did, and that displaced some of these days by 13 days. So many of the fixed celebrations in the church occur 13 days earlier for the Catholics and the Protestants than they do for the Orthodox Church. But that's only in Bethlehem and Jerusalem. In the other parts of the West Bank and the Middle East, they've been able to coordinate so that they celebrate Christmas and Easter at the same time.
Now, the famous Church of the Nativity that's there in Bethlehem, tell listeners who have not had an opportunity to ever visit there, what they would find in terms of the different denominations that are represented in that one church.
Well, there are three denominations that have celebration rites in that church. The Greek Orthodox is the principal denomination. It's the principal denomination of Christians in the Middle East altogether. And in that church, they have primary rites and for space and whatnot. And also the Armenian church has a portion of the building. And in the church next door, which is attached, is the Roman Catholic Church.
And that's the church that people may have seen at a worldwide telecast on December 24th at midnight.
Correct.
The midnight mass there at St. Catherine's.
Correct. So at the Church of the Nativity and in Manger Square, which is the large plaza in front, they go through this celebration actually three times, because the Armenian church has their Christmas coming up, I think, on something like the 19th of January.
And you were able to be in Bethlehem when the very large Christmas tree was put up there on,
yes,
on Manger Square. Tell us about that experience.
Well, the Manger Square was filled with, the tree was put up several weeks ago. It was decorated from the gift from the church in Japan, and a very large tree. I would estimate it's 50 feet tall and very beautiful. There were thousands of people in the square on Christmas Eve celebrating. It was really more like a carnival than it was like a very solemn religious event. That is out in the square. Bands, they have a parade in the afternoon with marching bands, and they have then the mayor of the city and several officials gather together with the patriarch of the church and many other important people on a reviewing stand for the parade and for appropriate blessings and so forth, and then the ceremony moves inside the church.
Now, you said there was a big crowd. Were those mainly people from Palestine, from Jerusalem? Were they foreigners? Were they people from the West Bank?
As far as I could tell, most of the people were local people, or people from the West Bank. Most of the conversation was in Arabic, and from what I could tell, there were foreigners there like myself, and there were TV cameras and media, all sorts of media facilities were set up, and there was a stage with entertainment going on, music, and it went late into the night, long after I had left to come home, because we had our own Christmas Eve service here in Beit Jala.
Now, Beit Jala is right next to Bethlehem. What are their respective sizes?
Well, I think Bethlehem has about 80,000 people, and Beit Jala is something like 20,000.
And both of those towns, villages, cities, are about how many miles from Jerusalem?
Well, actually, from the center, for me to get to the center, the old city of Jerusalem, by bus, takes about half an hour. It's about 10 miles or so, but we have to go through checkpoints and so forth, so there's always it's a slow process.
I don't know if there are crows in Israel or Palestine, but as the way the crow flies, it's 9 or 10 miles to the old city. And now that Jerusalem has kept expanding and expanding,
They're touching.
They touch, really.
Yeah, they border on one to the other.
So folks in Jerusalem may think of Bethlehem and Beit Jala as suburbs now of Jerusalem.
That's right. If it weren't for the separation wall that cuts us off, which makes it very clear that we're not suburbs.
How tall is that wall?
It's a concrete wall about 30 feet high.
And there are checkpoints to get through the various gates and
yes,
roads.
There are.
Right. And there are some roads that can only be used by Israelis who are going to the various settlements that are
Correct.
Now scattered throughout the West Bank.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. We'll be talking more about that, of course, in just a few minutes, but let me reintroduce our guest and encourage listeners, since this is a live program on January 6, 2013, to give us a call. If you're hearing this within the Champaign-Urbana, Illinois listening area code 217, punch in your phone 333-9455 to ask a question to our guest, Pastor John Sutherland. If it's long distance, anywhere the program is heard, including if you're listening on the Internet, if you're in the continental U.S., you may punch in 800-222-9455. So local callers, 333-WILL, long distance, 800-222-WILL. And we're always eager to have comments, questions from listeners. And, of course, if you missed part of this program or have to leave before it's over, want to hear the rest, it will be archived here at the station within a few days, a week probably at most, and you can find it by going to will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. And just leave the G off of keeping, and you'll see all of our former programs there. And you can go to this date, or you can type in John Sutherland, and you can listen to this program on various devices at your convenience. John, you have been in Palestine on this visit. How long?
This is a 3-month visit, and I have 2 more weeks to go.
And before, you've been at Beit Jala helping at that Lutheran church for how many different times and for how long each time?
Well, I lived here from 2006 to 2008, and so that was sort of a serious stay here, and did volunteer work on behalf of the church. And then I have visited casually and brought groups over between 2008 and this year.
And
I think three times I had tour groups that I led and brought over here.
Okay. And listeners may not know why there's a Lutheran church in the West Bank under the Palestinian Authority. These are there are Arab Christians there, and if so, out of the 20,000 people in Bet Jala, how many might be Christian as opposed to how many Muslim?
Well, Bet Jala is one of the few cities in Palestine that has a majority of Christians. I would guess maybe 80% of our city is Christian.
And what about Bethlehem right next door?
Bethlehem is about 50-50.
Okay. 50% Muslim, 50% Christian.
Right. And we have three churches in Bet Jala. This Lutheran church is the smallest. And then there's a Roman Catholic church, and then there's a Greek Orthodox congregation.
We have our first caller on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with our guest, Pastor John Setterlund. Let's go to line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead, please.
I'd like to know how you would compare conditions in Palestine today with conditions that you've observed on your earlier trips. Are Palestinians more or less restricted by the Israelis? Do you see any signs of improved relationships between the Israelis and the Palestinians?
It's a little hard to say because things change all the time, but I think there's more restriction now than there was 5 years ago. The wall is continually being expanded, the wall that separates the West Bank from Jerusalem and so forth. And also the settlement building continues, which means more and more space is being taken by Jewish settlers, which are occupying West Bank land, and that's increasing, and that is restricting the movement of the Palestinians.
I was also curious about whether you had any way of evaluating relations between Hamas and Fatah. I know that may be difficult, given your inability perhaps to be on top of communications daily. But any impressions on that front?
Well, I hear on the TV here that they're making great efforts. They just celebrated the 48th anniversary of the Fatah Party, and it was celebrated sort of a joint celebration. So the president of Palestine, Mahmoud Abbas, is making a great effort to encourage cooperation as the only way that Palestine can hope to achieve any kind of status in the world. So I think possibly that's improving.
Good. Well, thank you very much.
Nice to hear from you.
Thank you for the question. Let me follow up on that question a little bit, John. When the caller was asking about relations between Palestinians and Israelis, I remember when we interviewed you by phone, I guess it's been 4 years now, from the West Bank, you were saying that many Palestinians, because of the just very terrible economic depression there, were leaving, particularly young people. Have you noticed that is continuing now 4 to 5 years later?
Yes, I hear more of that each time I come, I think, that the future, I mean, they can survive here, but they know that there's no future for their children, and there's no probably no employment opportunities. Many of them are highly educated. We have good universities in Palestine, and many, many people get university degrees, but there's no work for them in this country. And so if they can possibly find a way to get out, usually to the West, they will take that opportunity.
And why has there been such a terrible economic depression there for so long?
It's principally due to the restrictions of the Israeli occupation, the limited travel, the unequal taxation system between Israel and Palestine, the difficulty in getting goods into Palestine. Everything is controlled. All this commerce is controlled by Israel, and it is just very, very difficult. Even water and electricity are made very precious commodities here because of the occupation.
And I noticed when I was setting up this long-distance phone call from Champaign, Illinois to the West Bank, that to call Israel was four cents a minute, and to call Palestine was 24 cents a minute.
That's normal.
Now, the Israelis, of course, would say that these restrictions are necessary because of the violence that has come to Israel from particularly violent wings of Palestinians, perhaps more recently from Gaza than from the West Bank. But what's your impression of that as a more or less neutral observer from Champaign-Urbana, Illinois?
Well, I think that the power is so unequal. It's not a level playing field by any means here, and I think that Israel has colossal strength and security compared to what Palestine has, and not to mention the support of America and most of Europe, that it's, of course, there's violence going back and forth because people are so terribly oppressed and frustrated and angered. They don't like, for some reason, to have their land stolen from them, and they fight back. But just think, the Palestinians, they don't have an army. They don't have military support from the West. They don't have much financial support from America and other places either. So there's violence going back and forth on both sides, and I would say there's terrorism going back and forth on both sides. So, but it's the Palestinians are the weaker player in this contest. That's for sure.
Now, you mentioned that Bet-Jala has a majority of about 80% Christian. The rest are Muslim in that particular town. Bethlehem is about 50-50. Is there violence within either of those two towns between Muslims and Christians?
No, there isn't. There is not any violence.
Why are they such good neighbors?
Well, I think because they're a common ethnic group. They're all Arab people. Many of them are, most of them attend schools together as young people. I know that the church-operated schools, of which are many in this area, are all co-educational. So they grow up together, and then they have, of course, a common occupational force that they are all resisting together.
And they play games together. You mentioned in one of your recent newsletters that you send to people back here, well, maybe around the world, but that when the pastor of the Lutheran Church there in Beit Jala, next to Bethlehem, recently retired, that there was a soccer tournament to sort of celebrate his long tenure there.
That's right. And this was this was sponsored by this church where I'm working, and we invited children from government schools, which we would call public schools, the state-run schools, the private schools. Many of them were Muslims, because outside of Beit Jala, the Muslim population is predominant. In all of the area, the Christian population is only about 2%. So it's a very unusual situation here in Beit Jala with a Christian majority. But it is necessary, if you're going to accomplish anything in this society, to include both Muslim groups and Christian groups together. And to have games with the school children is one of the good ways to do that.
You've raised several interesting issues that I'm sure listeners will want to comment or question, ask questions about. Let me give the numbers again. in Champaign-Urbana, 217-333-9455. We'll reach the studio, and our engineer, Kyle Crow, will answer the phone and put you in line to listen, to talk with our guest. Please turn your radios down as you talk on the phone, because there is a slight delay. If you're calling long distance, the phone number is 800-222-9455 for a toll-free number to be live on the radio with our guest, Pastor John Sutherland, talking to us from 1 in the morning in Palestine. We have another caller on line number 1. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Thank you. I haven't been able to listen too continuously, so I'm sorry if this is a little disjointed, but I'm just preoccupied with U.S. policy vis-a-vis, and we see it being formed now with the cabinet and all this argument about Hegel, but it seems to me that we should focus on Kerry, despite the fact that we know the Senate will pass him in, but he led the Senate in condemning the Goldstone report about the Gaza attack, the first one, and he also campaigned against the World Court's jurisdiction in the decision about the separation wall. And he led the Senate from his seat at the Foreign Policy Committee to in both of those. And it bothers me that it's frustrating. It's a bit of a council of despair, but I'd just like for you to react to that. And
stay on the line. You may have follow up questions. Go ahead, John. If you could hear that, all right.
Well, if you think it's frustrating in America, you should talk to the Palestinian people. It's really frustrating here. They can't understand why America, especially with its moral and financial clout, can't create a more equitable situation here and influence, the establishment of a peaceful state in this area. It's interesting to see how the new defense minister is Secretary of Defense is going to be appointed or not, and that should stir up something in the Congress, I think.
Caller, would you like to follow up?
Well, it's just I think Hegel is a pragmatist, and he opposes the excesses of the Israeli foreign policy, and maybe a little misguidedly, because I'm afraid that it is really U.S. foreign policy, and you wonder whether stability and peace is really the prime objective of U.S. policy. From evidence in front of us, it looks like they're more inclined to prefer a status quo of violence, I don't know how that sounds. It's not very often discussed, frankly, it seems to me, and I applaud your work there, and I'll sign off now. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. We do have another caller waiting on line number 2. Yes, you're on the air, Keeping the Faith, with Pastor John Sutherland.
Hello. Thanks for accepting my call. I'll identify myself because I think Pastor Sutherland would probably recognize the voice. This is Paul Schrader.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Good to talk to you and hear from you. The question is, again, a kind of broad general one. Do you notice any impact on Palestine or the people you see in contact of the Arab Spring and of the hopes that were raised by that and of events in Egypt and now, of course, in Syria? Or are the people there so naturally so oppressed or preoccupied with their own troubles that they don't really have a great deal to say or feel about those wider events?
They don't talk very much about it. Interestingly enough, I thought there would be much more information available. But here, as well as in the States, they don't seem to know what's going on in Syria.
Uh-huh. Really?
And they, everybody's sort of holding their breath, because I think that more and more the attitude is, will a revolutionary faction bring a better situation or not? And yeah. I think they're encouraged by what they hear from Egypt.
Really?
And there's some, you know, traveling back and forth to Egypt and some kind of connections with Egypt. And I think that the fact that the border is a little more open between Gaza and Egypt, and that's an encouragement to the people.
I see. Could I ask this another follow-up question on that?
Of course. Go right ahead. Of course.
The question would be, right now, at least, or recently, the relations between Muslims and Coptic Christians in Egypt seem, if anything, not to have improved, but to have gotten somewhat worse as a result of the revolution. Does that disturb the Christian minority in Palestine, or isn't that seeming?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I could
because,
imagine.
Because they can see that this spirit might be influential in Palestine as well.
Yeah, right.
And I just saw, since you mentioned the Coptics, I just saw on our local TV now Christmas Eve celebrations from Cairo.
They spoke
briefly about the Coptic Church and that they are 10% of the Egyptian population and that they are very uncertain of what the new trends in the Constitution, what's between the lines of their new Constitution, what that will mean for the Christian population in Egypt.
Yes, well, I can imagine, and I can see why that would be disturbing. Well, I've taken enough of your time. It's good to hear from you again, John.
Yes, you
too. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Let me repeat the numbers for others who'd like to join the conversation. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. That's the area code 217. Elsewhere long distance, 800-222-9455, including listeners on the Internet. We're a little bit past our usual break at 20 minutes after the hour, but let me just remind you, you're listening to WILL AM 580, heard also simultaneously at 90.9 FM HD3, if you have one of those cool HD radios, and heard also at will.illinois.edu/AM or using your app from public radio. Happy to have all listeners and happy to have you join the conversation. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, I'll be traveling for the rest of the month of January, and Professor Danny Otto is filling in. He's a professor of philosophy and religion at Eastern Illinois University. His guest next week will be Rabbi Norman Klein from Sinai Temple, talking about his encounters with the New Testament, the Christian scriptures. A rabbi encounters the New Testament. On January 20, Professor Otto will be talking with a professor from Georgetown University who recently spoke at the University of Illinois, sponsored by the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center. Professor Jonathan Brown gave a fascinating lecture here, I was able to hear. And Professor Otto will be talking with him about some of those issues in contemporary Islam in this country. And then on the 27th, Danny will be talking with a professor from DePaul University, Michael Budd, about contemporary Catholicism in the U.S. And so those are three programs coming up in the next few weeks. I might just mention that Professor Otto has been a guest on this program, talking about his background growing up in the Amish community here in Illinois. He's now Mennonite, but he is showing his ecumenical spirit by interviewing a Muslim, a Catholic, and a Jew in the next 3 weeks. As many of you know, Don Nolan, professor of religion and philosophy at Parkland College, has been my colleague for many years here on Keeping the Faith, and he continues to be. But he and I are both, if I may say so, getting on in years, and so we're happy to have a younger person join the team. And Danny Otto has willingly stepped forward to also volunteer to host some of these programs and find guests. Well, let's get back to our guest for today. We're talking with Pastor John Sutherland, long distance. It's 1 in the morning in Palestine, and John is trying to stay awake and doing a very good job of it, talking with us about the situation there. We're particularly remembering the fact that this is the Christmas Eve tonight for the Orthodox Christians in Bethlehem and Jerusalem. The Armenian Christians will celebrate their Christmas Eve on the 18th of January and Christmas Day the 19th. And, of course, Western Christians, Roman Catholics and Protestants, celebrated Christmas Eve and Christmas last December 24 and 25. So we have this interesting historical situation where this holiday is celebrated over a long period. John Sutherland's a parish volunteer in Bet Jala at a Lutheran church right next to the larger city of Bethlehem, both on the West Bank within the Palestinian Authority. So we're talking about a number of issues, but John, tell me a little bit about tourism. I know in Palestine, Bethlehem area really depends on the income from tourists. Has the recent difficulties, fightings, violence in Gaza and other parts in Israel cut down on tourism?
Well, you're right. This is the chief industry of Bethlehem. And the Bethlehem territory includes Beit Jala. You might say Beit Jala is a suburb of Bethlehem.
Yes.
We talked about suburbs earlier. And tourism is the principal industry here. And every time there is a war, like there was in Gaza, 6 weeks ago or whenever, that tour groups cancel their plans and individuals decide not to come for whatever reason. And this is really very hurtful to the local economy and very discouraging. Christmas, of course, is the big time for Bethlehem, and we're doing quite well, actually. The hotels in Bethlehem are, they tell me, well-filled. The streets are jammed, and I think the souvenir shops and the churches and the restaurants are all and hotels are all doing quite well for a while, but that's only a few weeks. Anyone who has been here to the West Bank knows that there is no problem, no physical danger of coming, even if there is an unsettling time like there was in Gaza earlier. This was not any, it did not endanger any of us here in Beit Jala at all, and it I wouldn't have known that there was anything going on if I didn't see it on TV or listen on the radio or have people talk about it.
And yet Israel is a very small country, about the size of New Jersey. You're not very far from Gaza.
That's true. That's true. And they said there were rockets flying over from Gaza to Jerusalem, which would have been over our heads, but we didn't see any or hear anything. So I'm not sure. It's a little hard to distinguish rumors from actual facts.
When in your months there this time, even though it was in the midst of all the violence and rockets from Gaza and incursion of troops into Gaza by the Israelis, did you experience any sense of danger as you traveled back and forth from Beit Jala to Jerusalem to Bethlehem?
No. The closest to danger that I came as there was a demonstration on Independence Day, which is the 15th of November, and there was a group of us who I joined the group. We walked from Beit Jala to the center of Beit Jala up to the border, to one of the checkpoints, and had there were speeches and there was some singing and flag waving and so forth, and the Israeli soldiers were there. There was no violence that I saw of any sort, but I did smell tear gas for the first time in my life.
Now, that was Independence Day for the Palestinian Authority?
Yes.
Yes, okay. And so that would have been the Fatah 48th anniversary, or not?
No. This is a national celebration.
Oh, I see. Okay. I see. All right.
And it's and that was about the same time that the Gaza war broke out. And so this, I think it was, I don't have my my journal handy to see exactly what happened each day, but it was done in solidarity for the people in Gaza.
Okay. You talk about safety for visitors, for yourself, for Christians in this 98% Muslim country. Let listeners know about your experience recently singing in a community choir, and who was in the choir, and where you performed, and what kind of music. And
it was a group. I think it was nearly all Christians. It was in the choir. I would guess. I didn't again ask, but I assumed it was all Christian people who were singing. It was the music director from the Lutheran school here in Beit Jala invited me to come and sing with them because their choir was short on men's voices. Where have I heard this before? And so I went for weekly rehearsals, and we joined some choirs from Bethlehem and from Ramallah, and we gave a series of three concerts.
Ramallah is also in the West Bank?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Ramallah is like the capital of Palestine. The government offices, the Palestinian Authority offices are there, and the president office and so forth. And so we rehearsed for 6 or 8 weeks, and then we joined a chamber orchestra, a professional chamber orchestra from the area, and we performed a Christmas concert three nights in a row. The first night was in Bethlehem, the second night was in Jerusalem, and the third night was in Ramallah. So this was a wonderful activity for me, and I was apparently well received because the churches we performed in were packed for standing room only all three nights, despite the fact that the weather some of those nights was very, very bad.
What's the weather like there today?
Well, I just looked out before I spoke to you, and it's cold and rainy and very windy tonight.
What is cold in Palestine?
Oh, I'd say it's not freezing.
Okay.
But it's worse than freezing. It's like when you get a 33-degree rain.
Okay.
With high winds. Very uncomfortable to be outside.
But
it
no
sort of dampened the enthusiasm, I think, over in Manger Square this afternoon.
But no snow.
No snow yet.
Okay. When you sang with this community choir in Bethlehem, Jerusalem, and Ramallah, what did you sing in and what languages?
We sang the Christmas oratorio of Camille Saint-Saëns, which is in Latin. So we had German speakers, we had English speakers, we had Arabic speakers, and we were all singing together in Latin.
Tell us about the children you are working with now. I believe you're tutoring some children?
One of my jobs that I have these weeks is teaching English to school children in a village on the other side of Bethlehem. And this is quite an experience for me because, first of all, I'm not a professional teacher. They come after school, and we serve them hot lunch. This is another program from our Beit Jala church. We serve them hot lunch, and then we offer tutoring. The 2 days a week that I go, we have English lessons. And they also, other days, they have dancing and singing and art and crafts and different things. So it's an after-school program, you might say, that our church has been sponsoring now. It's beginning its fifth year. It's called The Tent of Abraham. And it's especially unique for me because it's an all-Muslim village. And on Christmas Day, which was a Tuesday, I was out there and teaching them about Christmas. And they listened quite attentively to me. I was very pleasantly surprised.
Were you hoping to convert some?
Not a bit, no.
But you felt it was something that is part of their cultural education?
Christmas is a big deal for everybody, Muslims and Christians. alike around here, and so they all know that it's Christmas, and we had Christmas gifts for them all, which they were, of course, excited about, and many, many of them came up. I think someone told them they should do this. They came up to me as they arrived and greeted me with Merry Christmas in English.
In English.
They were so proud that they could do that, especially the small ones just beamed when they said that.
And could you say thank you in Arabic?
Oh, I could, yes.
We're talking with John Sutherland, a parish volunteer at a Lutheran church in Bet Jala on the West Bank in Palestine, on the occasion of the the Orthodox Christmas Eve tonight. We get back with him in just a moment. It's about 20 minutes till the end of our program. Let me remind you, you're listening to AM 580 WILL and also 90.9 FM HD3. Let's hear a little bit about what's coming up on Focus tomorrow here on WILL. Let's listen to a little bit of something about Focus. Here we go.
Monday is the 14th anniversary of then-President Clinton's impeachment trial. It was, at the time, a major story, dissected moment by moment by pundits in oftentimes the most vitriolic way imaginable, and that sometimes hateful discourse hasn't exactly gone away in the 14 years since. I'm Craig Cohen. On Monday's Focus, we'll talk about the state of political discourse in America, how our elected officials, how pundits, analysts, and even we talk to one another about politics. Join us Monday morning at 10 on WILL AM.
And we're back talking with John Sutherland in Palestine. John, you sent in your most recent newsletter to folks who are following your adventures there these years. You mentioned a children's Christmas carol sung to the tune of Jingle Bells, and these were Arab Christian children that you heard singing this, and the Arabic text as translated into English goes like this: He comes to save the world, to bring the grace of God, to heal all who are ill, and give the hungry food. So now at Christmas time we kneel to him and pray, Lord Jesus, fill us with your love and stay with us today. And then a chorus about Jesus Christ, little child with a heart of love, teaching, loving, saving us, he comes here from above. Why are Arab Christian children singing to the tune of Jingle Bells?
Well, I'm sure, I don't know. When I first heard this song in church, I couldn't believe it. I had to ask. I said, are they singing Jingle Bells or what? And they said, no, that's a religious text.
And then you got it translated and found
and
out.
I asked one of the young men to what it was, and he told me, he translated for me, and we came up, then I sort of put it into a metrical version that would fit the tune more perfectly than his translation.
I see.
And we, so there you are. I think they have a secular version of it as well, and I hear them singing Jingle Bells in English.
Huh.
And the marching bands play it when they march through the city streets of Bethlehem for their Christmas parade. So it's a biggie here.
Now, is music sort of distinctively a Christian practice in Palestine, or do you hear music from mosques?
I think religious music is a distinctly Christian phenomenon. The music from the mosques is the intoning that we hear for the verses of the Quran,
which is quite beautiful.
The call to prayer.
Yes.
That is sung from the minarets all over the Holy Land.
And even in a town like Bet Jala, where 80% are Christian, you hear those calls to prayer,
right,
five times a day from the minarets.
Right.
How do Christians respond as they hear their Muslims being called to prayer?
Well, they've heard it all their life, so it's no big adjustment, but I hope that they stop and pray.
Uh-huh.
It would be nice if they would do that.
And there are church bells that ring in Palestine?
Yes, the same. All the churches have bells ringing. And in Bethlehem, the Orthodox churches were ringing their bells loud and long today.
And how do your Muslim neighbors respond to that?
I think they're used to it. I think that they, it's just what we do here. They don't seem to, you know, there's no objection. I don't hear anyone saying this or that bothers me. It should, they should quiet down from either side.
We're down to our last 10 minutes or so of Keeping the Faith today with Pastor John Sutherland. Let me give the phone numbers again and encourage listeners to call with a question or two. Please try to keep them relatively short so we can get in more than one if that, there are people interested in calling. 333-9455 is the local number in area code 217. Long distance is a toll-free number, 800-222-9455. And again, let me remind you that this program, as well as our other previous programs, can be found on our WILL archives at will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. And just leave the G off of keeping, and you'll be able to find those programs that you can listen to at your convenience on many different devices these days. John, when you went first to Bethlehem and Bethjala and experienced the Christian churches there, you had been serving churches, Lutheran churches, Protestant Christian churches here in Illinois, and you'd been a campus pastor at the University of Illinois for 15 years before you retired. What surprised you the most about the Christian worship in that setting?
I think I was pleasantly surprised at how vibrant it is and how the people like to sing and how much the religion means to them.
We have a couple of callers waiting with some more questions. Good. Let's go to line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
John, you spoke about the difficulty that people were experiencing in Palestine and the lack of support from the U.S. government and their confusion or concern about that. What would you suggest for individual Americans to do in order to support the Palestinian people for their freedom?
Well, my first answer to that question always is, come here. Come to Palestine and see. Because I'm sure those people that have come know what I'm talking about. But not everyone can do that, I realize. I was pleased to hear just the other day that Al Jazeera is now making all their connections that they need to and getting approval to broadcast their TV channel in the United States. So that will be something to pay attention to. A Middle Eastern media network would be helpful. There are many informational avenues on the internet to get facts and figures and images of Palestine.
And American citizens, when they travel in Palestine, I know from having done it myself with my spouse, I really have it a lot easier than the Palestinians. You can get around more quickly through the checkpoints. An American passport works wonders.
That's right. There is there's basically no difficulty. There's some frustration in getting through, but there always is. I mean, even at American airports, it's frustrating. So it's to travel can be frustrating when you're crossing borders, but the hospitality is very inviting and very welcoming always, and it's not that expensive to travel in this country. So coming here is one thing, searching out some information, talking to Palestinian people who live in the United States and who stay in contact with family and friends back in the old country would be another thing that would be important, I believe.
Caller, do you have a follow-up comment or question?
No, but just to say thank you.
Thank you for calling. And we have another caller waiting on line number two to talk to our guest today, Pastor John Sutherland in Palestine.
Yes, Pastor Sutherland, it's an honor to speak with you, and it's very illuminating to hear you. in your very balanced assessment. I wondered if you would comment on the fact, do you think that this extreme control exerted by Israel is out of fear of annihilation in light of the kind of statements that have come from the leaders of the Palestinian people, albeit the extreme leaders, that Israel should not exist? Would you comment on that, please? And also the need for to change or to alter, this is second part of the question, the whole collective consciousness in the area to make it more peaceful, less fearful. I'll take my answer by the radio, and thank you again.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for calling.
Well, I think that Israel is here to stay, and Israel should stay here. So I think that the voices that we hear, and I don't really hear them anymore, I think that there have been a few radical voices, as the caller pointed out, who have said Israel doesn't have a right to exist. Well, they do, and but so did the Palestinians. And I think that the United States needs to take leadership in promoting a more just solution here. I don't think that Israel is in danger of annihilation. I think one of the underlying fears, I think, of the Jewish population of Israel is that is the demographic population, because the fact is simple that the Arab birth rate is higher than the Jewish birth rate, and a truly democratic system here would undercut much of the Jewish control, it seems. I think that's an underlying fear for much of the security issues that are going on.
Any hope for a two-state solution?
Well, I hesitate to say, because I don't know where that's going to be, because the land of Palestine has been so atomized and cut up and torn apart that I don't know where the Palestinians are going to find their state. Although it remains a hope, it remains a strong hope among the people here. But that would involve displacement of perhaps millions of people in both directions. The Palestinians who live in Israel as citizens, where do they go? The Jewish settlers who live illegally on Palestinian territory, where do they go? Not to mention millions of Palestinian refugees in Lebanon and Syria and Jordan who would like to come back. Where do they go? So I don't see any easy solution to forming a state for Palestine.
And the last caller had a second part to her question about what it might take. I think she used the phrase for the collective consciousness in Israel and Palestine for there to be more peaceful atmosphere situation there. Any thoughts?
Well, I think that in any case, one state or two states or more, these people are going to have to learn to get along with each other, because they're going to be neighbors or fellow citizens, one or the other. And I think that there needs to be some kind of civil rights recognition between all the different peoples of this land.
You mentioned that you encourage Americans to visit Israel and Palestine and see for themselves. I was able to travel as a Christian American easily in Palestine, partly with your guidance, but I think we could have made it fine by ourselves, actually. We stayed at that wonderful guest house there in Bet Jolly that the Lutheran Church provides. And we stayed at the YMCA in Jerusalem very inexpensively in a very lovely building right there close to the old city, and ate in their great restaurant, and just had a wonderful time seeing places I'd read about, of course, as a Christian pastor for most of my life. But I wonder, can Jews travel safely? Can American Jews travel safely in Palestine?
I don't know if they've tried.
Uh-huh.
I think they can. But I think many of them are nervous about it. Many Christians, by the way, are also nervous about coming. There are many Christians who, how do I say this? Christian Zionists who feel that Israel and only Israel has the right to this land. And they are not comfortable with the establishment of a Palestinian society either. Now, as for the Jewish people of Israel, they are forbidden by their own by Israeli laws of coming to the West Bank. At the entrance to Beit Jala, there's a big sign in Hebrew, Arabic, and English saying that this territory is forbidden for Israeli citizens, and it's dangerous.
John, I'm afraid on that rather sad note, we are out of time. We've taken up your hours there from 1 in the morning till 2, and thank you very much for being on Keeping the Faith.
Well, and, thank you for the call.
All right. Mm-hmm. And I do thank our callers for their good questions to our guest, Pastor John Sutherland. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for Keeping the Faith. I'll be traveling the next 3 weeks, and usually Don Nolan fills in very ably here for me, professor from Parkland College in philosophy and religion. But this time we're getting a break, and Professor Danny Otto is going to be doing three programs in a row. He's from Eastern Illinois University, also a professor and head of the department there of philosophy and religion, or at least he has been in the past. He may just be teaching now. Next week, his guest will be Rabbi Norman Klein from Sinai Temple. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Lisa Braltz. In March, I'll be hosting WILL-TV's cooking show, Family Dinner Favorites. We'll demonstrate recipes, talk about food and beverage pairings, and much more. We're also collecting your prized recipes for the Family Dinner Favorites cookbook. Please share your favorite recipes with us by Friday, January 25th. Send them to willmembership@illinois.edu or to recipes, WILL-TV, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. And if you'd like to cook with us on the show, let us know.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL